You're listening to the Nature Stories podcast. I'm Samantha Brown. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. Up now, a piece from Stories from the Heart of the Land, the public radio series about the connection between people and the natural world. Here's series host Jay Allison to tell you more.
Fishermen have a reputation for being secretive about where they catch fish, especially older fishermen, and for good reason. Their hard-won knowledge is the difference between making a living and going broke. They depend on their secrets.
Now, the boys would bait the trawls and go and set them.
So when we heard that 30 retired Maine fishermen had willingly given up a lifetime of secrets about where they had the most luck towing their nets and dragging the ocean bottom for fish, we took notice.
In Libby Island Sound.
Libby Island Sound,
the fish was always at.
These men had spent 30, 40, 50 years chasing ground fish, cod, haddock, halibut, flounder, 19 species in all, in the Gulf of Maine.
Every spring, there used to be draggers come up in, up by the east side of Big Spoon Island, up by the Drunkard, right up to Saddleback Rock.
It wasn't until Ted Ames came along that they spilled the beans. Ames is a fisherman, and he's also a MacArthur so-called Genius Grant Award winner. He was the first fisherman to get the award, and so far, the only. So why did these fishermen give away this information? And what kind of man would they trust enough to tell? Nina Ellis has been spending summers in Maine for over 30 years. She went back to find out.
They told their secrets because there aren't enough fish anymore, especially inshore, close to the coast. There were once an unimaginable amount of cod in the Gulf of Maine, and now they aren't even worth trying to go out and catch anymore. And so they told their secrets to a fellow fisherman who's also a scientist. And that's a really rare combination, because scientists and fishermen almost never get along.
Now, I used to go to these meetings and listen to these scientists, and you could tell they didn't know enough to tie their shoelaces, really.
I'm your basic nature-loving summer tourist, what they used to call a rusticator in Maine. One morning I was sailing a little dinghy in Penobscot Bay, and this huge lobster boat roared up and stopped right next to me. I saw a man step away from the wheel, engage a winch and haul up a dripping lobster trap. He emptied it, he rebaited it, and he dropped it back in the water, and then he gunned the engine and he was flying away. I could hear Elvis Presley trailing behind him in the wind. And I realized as I watched him that I didn't know anything about fishing in Maine. Why was I seeing only lobster boats? Why wasn't I seeing other commercial fishing boats? And all those fish that I was eating in restaurants, where were they from? I know now that all those towns around Penobscot Bay at that time were struggling, but I was oblivious. Just describe for me where we are and what we're looking at here.
Well, we're close to Sand Beach.
Ted Ames used to be a ground fisherman. For 30 years, he chased them. He's a lobsterman now, and he's very proud of that. In fact, he thinks that the lobster industry is going to show the way to improving conditions for ground fish in the Gulf of Maine. Every morning before the sun comes up, lobster boats from Stonington head out into the open water of Penobscot Bay. And on a normal day, Ted Ames would be with them. But he's got a really bad back. He calls it old fisherman-itis. So he takes me to the side of the road to show me Penobscot Bay.
We're here on this sort of southern western part of Deer Isle, and we're looking across Penobscot Bay. I see water and islands. What do you see when you look at this water?
Well, if you take an extension of what you see on top of the water, this isn't the top of a pool table. There are shoals and ledges and deep holes. And that's what you see. That's our backyard.
You see the bottom.
Yep.
Could I put you in a boat anywhere and you could tell me what's on the bottom?
Pretty much. I think that's true of most fishermen I know. it becomes your backyard. And if it doesn't, you won't last long in this business. That's your bread and butter.
Ted Ames' family has fished in Penobscot Bay since the 1700s. They're from Vinyl Haven, where he was born.
I'm the runt of the litter. I was always told from the time I was this tall, you're too scrawny for this business. Now, you've got a good head on your shoulders. You go to school and do something. You may as well waved a red flag.
He took that advice and he went to school and he got a master's degree in biochemistry from the University of Maine, but he never stopped fishing. He learned to do it from his father and from his uncles, and his grandfather was a lighthouse keeper right out here in the 1920s.
A little pinnacle out there about 4 or 5 miles is Saddleback Light. And just below there...
Back then, the Penobscot Bay was full of fish. His grandfather said he counted the sails of 100 fishing boats in a single day.
But you can pretty much work your way right around these islands and in the deeper channels and put your finger on a spawning ground, or what used to be a spawning ground.
Right after he stopped ground fishing in the 1990s, Ted Ames got involved with a plan to grow codfish in a hatchery and then release them on spawning grounds. But the problem was that nobody in the scientific community knew where those historic spawning grounds were. But because he'd been fishing all that time, Ted Ames knew.
Oh, I and nearly every other fisherman along the coast that it was old enough had caught ripe codfish along the way or had heard stories of ripe cod being and haddock being caught in the wintertime the whole length of the coast.
He went to get those stories about where those old spawning grounds were. It was in the middle of winter, and he interviewed the fishermen in their homes.
Well, how many years did you fish? You started pretty young.
Yeah, I used to, when I was 5 years old, I used to steer the boat with my father going down halibut trawling. I'm not kidding you.
Is that right?
By the sound of the tapes, Ted Ames was having a pretty good time.
We had a great screeching 22-foot boat.
Oh, major size.
Oh, with a four.
He had coffee, he ate homemade donuts, and he scratched everybody's dogs and cats behind the ears. He was a really patient listener and very focused. Over and over and over, he asked about the spawning grounds.
That's an old chart. Yeah.
And every place he went, he took a set of old charts.
Feel free to mark right on them. I'm not in the antique business at all.
I went to Ted Ames' living room and sat with him and listened to the interviews. He had his headphones cranked up really loud because he says he's diesel deaf.
Was there anything to the western?
But as he listens, his eyes are really smiling.
At one point, there used to be a place you would catch.
So what's he doing now?
He's marking locations on a chart of where they caught cod in haddock back in when he was first working on them.
Those are haddock places.
Is it likely that he'd never told anybody this before?
Very likely. It's not information you hand out. I'm sure he told his sons.
Keep it in the family.
Yep.
Let me get my glasses on here.
You too, huh?
Yeah, oh, I can't read a thing now. Where in the hell are we? Okay.
So Ted Ames took all of this information from all of these fishermen, and eventually he identified something like 600 square miles of historical cod spawning grounds. He worked with this information for 6 years, and in the end, he found out something that nobody had ever known before. Ted Ames showed that instead of one big homogeneous group of fish, there were actually four subgroups of fish up and down the coast. And each one of those subgroups migrated differently, spawned differently, and had different feeding habits. And then he realized that the subgroup in the Penobscot Bay, where he'd been fishing all those years, was essentially gone. The federal government, which makes the ground rules for fishing, and which also counts the fish every year, had been counting incorrectly. And as a result, the Penobscot Bay fishermen kept on fishing when they should have been reined in.
You know, years ago, we tried and tried and tried to get these
politicians, I guess you'd call them, to listen to the fishermen.
Yeah.
About what was going on with the fisheries. Well, that isn't scientific. Bunch of eggheads. And 99% of them never saw salt water until they were...
Fishermen weren't totally blameless, though. Yeah. They'd been wasteful.
Yeah,
they scraped the bottom until it was clean.
Exactly,
they destroyed habitat as a result. And they wiped out fish wherever they showed up.
Now, do you think those fish disappeared because of... fishing pressure or because of some other...
The big
reason?
Factory trawlers were really the worst offenders, but the little guys did it too. And everybody pretty much agrees that water pollution was a factor as well. There's still no ground fishing in the Gulf of Maine, and that's why for 20 years I've only seen lobster boats there. And it's also why all my fish dinners have probably not been local fish.
We'll see where it goes. There aren't any secrets out there now, which means you need a different strategy.
Ted Ames is an optimist. He says that cod are actually returning, that he's caught little tiny ones in his lobster traps, and so is his brother. They're really small, he says, and he can't be sure where they're from, but he knows they're there. He says that you can bring ground fishing back if you just give control back to the fishermen. This is the way it's done in the lobster industry in Maine. They've divided the coast up into regions. The regions are managed by the lobstermen who fish in that area, and they make all the decisions about how many traps you can have, about how many licenses are issued each year, and about how big the lobsters can be when you bring them in. Nobody says this is perfect, but Ted Ames thinks that this is a model that's workable. He says if fishing is managed on a small scale, based on those subgroups that he discovered with the secrets from the fishermen, that it can be made sustainable. You just have to put faith in the fishermen.
I think fishing is an art form. Some people are especially good at it. It is a beautiful thing to watch. When you see somebody really good at what they're doing there, and you say, oh, go for it. Yeah, all another trap. It's magic. I don't know. There ought to be room for that in this world.
Ted Ames in Stonington, Maine. Nina Ellis said that Ames changed the way she looks at the land and the sea. That he made her see beyond the beautiful coastline to the complexity of what happens below the surface of the water.
That piece was made for Atlantic Public Media series Stories from the Heart of the Land, produced by Jay Allison and Emily Botine. Bill Frizzell composed and performed the music. The Nature Stories podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. If you'd like more information on the series or the podcast, go to nature.org/stories. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.